Okay, it being 3 o'clock, I will call this meeting of March 29th, meeting of the Climate and Energy Committee to order. We do have a quorum. First, we need to look at the minutes. Representative Swedzinski, do you have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the minutes from yesterday.
Representative Swedzinski moves the minutes. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And with that, the motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. So today we're, the bill on the agenda is House File 2754. We'll be marking the bill up. I will move that House File 2754 be referred to Ways and Means. At this point, you have a DE.
So do we have to move the DE? Yeah, so I'd like to move the DE1 to put the amendment before us.
With that, the amendment is before us. We're not going to vote now on it. We're going to start on amendments, and I believe you have an amendment to start with. That is A10, correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm offering the A10, which is a very minor amendment to remove some money from the Solar Rewards program that is done on a fiscal year that will be ending shortly, so it didn't really make sense to fund it this year, so we are taking that out. So I encourage a yes vote.
Chair, move the A10. Any discussion on the A10? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. With that, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So at this point, do you want to tell us about your bill or do we move to amendments?
I think we can go to amendments.
Okay. All right. So with that, we'll start on the A7, which I believe is Representative Bierman. Do we want to, anyone have questions first on the bill before we go to amendments?
I have one.
Okay, Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had one question on the DE when I was reviewing it.
Yeah.
I'll open up the page because it's a big bill. On page 67, line 14, I was just wondering if, Chair Ekum, if you could explain what the term emergency permit means.
Madam Chair?
I'm trying to orient myself here in this part of the bill. Mr. Eloff, maybe you can help us out with.
Mr. Chair, this is a fairly obscure section of B2 as well, Representative Igo, but I'm just reading it here, and it talks about a utility who's requires immediate construction of a large electric power facility due to a major unforeseen event. Therefore, it's an emergency, since it's called an emergency permit.
Representative Igo?
So I was just wondering then, thank you, Mr. Chair, why are we introducing, I mean, we're talking permitting regulation, that's a big deal in our state. Where did this kind of section of the bill kind of come into effect? Why, you know, just some background on it, I guess, what I'm looking for.
Mr. Chair, Representative Igo, yes, the reason for a number of these sections right next to each other was the change back on page 62 of adding energy storage facility to the definition of large electric power facilities. There are a number of sections of law that followed that actually didn't even use the words large electric power facilities. They talked about high voltage transmission lines and electric generating plants. So once the new definition was created, it had to be replicated in all those other sections of the bill so that they all now apply also to energy storage systems.
Representative Igo?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So will this be the first time then that we're instituting any sort of policy that we're going to have an emergency permit kind of section into law?
Mr. Chair, Representative Igo, no, I think it's the first time an energy storage system is going to need a site permit. That's really the point of putting it in that definition and having it apply in all these other sections.
Representative Igo?
So this emergency permit then, wouldn't it work for anything from battery storage to, let's say, a nuclear power plant to a hydro dam, maybe just even a wind farm, correct?
It applies to a large electric power facility, which is now defined on page 62. So it's large electric power generating plants. Those are over 50 megawatts, and high voltage transmission lines, and now energy storage systems as well.
Representative Igo?
Thank you. So I guess that helps a ton. So thank you, Mr. Eliff. I was just trying to see, like, you know, we haven't done stuff like this in state law before, requiring emergency permitting like this. And I just, and maybe this should go to the bill author, you know, again, why do we see the need to have emergency permitting like this?
Madam Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's part of the existing statute. So this isn't new language. This is existing statute that just had to be brought into this bill because it was a part of the section that was being amended.
Thank you. Like I said, just wanted some clarification there because it's, again, whenever we talk about permitting, that's a big deal. And there's a lot of stipulations in this section of law that we're making sure to add in here and clean up, you know, the no later than 195 days, the demonstrate an emergency, and just want to make sure that we're being proper stewards of how the state does business. So with that, I'll kind of leave it there, and I appreciate Mr. Eliff for kind of giving me the background on all the changes here today. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, let's move to amendments. Representative Bierman, let's move your amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A7.
Representative Bierman, A7, tell us about your amendment.
Try this one. Is that better? Any better? A7 amendment is simply changing just a few words, deleting the word assistance and permits the allowance of the SIP program to be involved in the intersection of pre-weatherization and weatherization program.
Any discussion to the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Bierman. I would recommend a yes vote.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A7, please say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. With that, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Next, we have the A3 amendment. Representative Ream, would you like to move your amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A3 amendment.
Representative Ream moves the A3. Why don't you tell us about your amendment?
So currently, the solar for schools projects that are built outside of XL service area are limited to 40 kilowatts, and this amendment would allow them to go beyond 40 kilowatts if the interconnecting electric utility approves the project. So it gives them a little bit more latitude.
Okay. Move to discussion. Chair Aiken?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to Representative Ream, why, you know, it's been pretty historically significant that keeping these projects at 40 kilowatts has been kind of an industry standard throughout the state of Minnesota, what we call a small installation versus a large. This is vastly expanding that. Why would you do that?
Representative Ream.
Thank you, Chair, and Representative Swedzinski. So my understanding is right now 40 kilowatts might give them about 5% of their electricity. And so this allows them to maybe do 10% or so. It doesn't necessarily give them, you know, up to 100%, but it allows them to work with the local utilities to make that decision. It gives them a little bit more leeway that way.
Chair Aiken?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't mean to interrupt. I just wanted to only stress that this is permissive. It just allows. It's not saying they have to, and it says the local governing utility has to okay it. So it's up to them. It's local control.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Okay, with that, the amendment is adopted. Next, we have the A11. Representative Swedzinski, do you want to move your amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A11 amendment.
Representative Swedzinski moves the A11. Why don't you tell us about your amendment?
You know, one of the things that we're concerned about is just the general spending in total. We have a budget target of 255 million with this bill, and then plus we're spending, I believe it was $93 million of the RDA account. This simply just makes sure that there is some money left on the bottom line. So this strips out some of the interconnection distributed energy, and we kind of make some tweaks to the solar production incentive in the state of Minnesota. You know, when we really look at, you know, this incentive has been around for a long time. You know, if you kind of think of the solar industry as kind of, you know, the baby chicks in the bald eagle nest, you know, sooner or later that mama eagle, you know, after they feed them and after they encourage them and let them grow, the mama eagle, you know, will kick those young fledgling chicks out of the nest. And I think, you know, at some point the state of Minnesota has to understand and recognize that these are not just fledgling industries, they're grown. And it's time for them to stand on their own two feet and, you know, allow them to soar. And by maintaining this subsidy, you know, I think Democrats are recognized that these chicks, you know, you think sometimes these chicks are kicked out maybe early and they splat on the ground beneath the tree. And the Republicans, this amendment, recognize the fact that these chicks should be able to soar and fly and, you know, have the potential to run into a wind turbine. And and this amendment allows it to end and allow those eagles to soar on their own. And I think, and I appreciate your support of the amendment to leave some dollars on the bottom line so that we can allow the solar industry to soar on their own rather than not trust them to soar on their own. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Smith. I'm glad we don't name amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bierman.
Do we have a new member at the table today? Just didn't know if...
Representative Spadinsky, would you like to introduce the...
Yes, members, I want to introduce the younger version of Pat Garofalo. Yes, he's a non-voting member, but this is Harry Swazinski. He's my eldest son. Mm-hmm. He's joining me this week at the Capitol, and thanks for letting him sit at the table, and I'll try to keep him to vote correctly today.
Mr. Chair, one follow-up, please.
Representative Bierman.
Just wanted to acknowledge to everybody that we have impressionable minds, and then we have your son as well. So just want to put us in context, and then I just have a question for your son, if I may. What's your first name?
Harry.
Harry, thank you. And I guess I have two questions. I just wanted to ask you if you know how smart your dad is.
He's smart.
He's very smart. No further questions, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right. Chair Acom, you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Swazinski, I certainly appreciate the efforts to reduce spending. And I think that while I appreciate that, I think these both of these programs, the interconnection as well as solar rewards, are important programs that are going to help us achieve our renewable energy goals. And so I would recommend a no vote to the amendment.
I'll just speak to this briefly. I think what Representative Swazinski here is doing is actually kind of a smart thing. And to break that down, we're going to let the free market do its job. You know, in this committee, we've heard a lot about how solar is, you know, the cheapest form of electricity. It seems every week we're hearing of a new company popping up. The federal government's putting money into this in tax credits. You know, maybe it is time to kind of reel back in the spending in the RDA and say, let's see over the next year or 2 years what's going to happen. And development-wise, and maybe we'll be pleasantly surprised. Maybe that private capital is going to spring up, and then we can start using the RDA to invest in other things in our state to get us to those goals that have been mentioned in this committee, or use them in place of, you know, new industries or attracting new industries. So I think this is a great amendment to support today, I hope we can all support it and add this to the bill. Thank you.
Representative Swazinski, would you like a final comment?
No, thank you. Thank
sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I would just like to speak to Representative Swazinski's amendment here, too. I mean, the other side of the aisle just pointed out how smart Representative Swazinski is. And this is a smart amendment. And I think Harry would probably agree, too, being that his dad is very smart. And not only that, this is an opportunity for just a little bit of bipartisan support here on this bill. Again, I'm new here. I've been here a few months. I've been doing a lot of listening, and I've noticed there's not a lot of bipartisan support in this committee. And so here's an opportunity, members, for us to show Minnesotans that we can have a little bit of bipartisanship. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representatives, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just I just want to let the eagle fly. Let the eagle fly. Vote green.
Okay. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
No.
Okay. That the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Next, we have the A5, Representative Swidinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. This amendment, the A5 amendment, we want to fund the advanced nuclear study. We really feel that, when you look at, the landscape of what we're doing. Oh, never mind. Are we doing the A5? Oh, sorry. I'm looking at my wrong amendment. Sorry. So the A5 amendment is really looking at what we know is going on in the marketplace. Sorry about that, members. We want to set aside $3.5 million. We already understand the state of North Dakota has already begun proceedings in suing the state of Minnesota for the blackout bill that we passed, that was passed a couple of weeks or a month back. And, this is just understanding the landscape so that, as we have, costs that come before us, we can foresee that that cost will be real. There's an opportunity. We've shown a history of losing these court cases and then being sued on top of it to repay the legal costs of North Dakota. And this is just a reaction of just trying to do what's right for the taxpayers and the ratepayers in Minnesota. Just setting it aside, it's not saying we have to spend this money to pay the law, but if we do happen to lose the court case, we can use those dollars for that. But also, this would transfer the money to the Office of the Attorney General to help defend Minnesota. And I think that might be a wise decision, and I'd appreciate a green vote. Thank you.
I'm going to make a brief comment because this would delete the building energy benchmarking, as well as part of that, a grant for BOMA to get more building engineers. That is a key program around dealing with building energy emissions, which is commercial buildings are 20% of our greenhouse gas emissions in the state, and you can't reduce what you don't measure. So this is a program that we've done a lot of work on and have a lot of support, come to a good place with stakeholders, with utilities around the state, and so I would urge a no vote on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what I will say is the Attorney General's office has a budget to help fight cases for the state, and so I think that this is unnecessary. And to Representative Kraft's point, these are important programs that, again, will help us reach our goals. So I would recommend a no vote.
Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In direct response to what you just said there, Chair Ecom, you're right. The Attorney General does have a budget in which to defend the state with. However, by actions of this committee, we've opened ourselves up to liabilities. We had a long conversation here in this committee and on the House floor about how we've opened ourselves up for litigation. It is only in good government that we do something today. When we were drafting this amendment, we would have just added new spending. However, that would be not germane to this bill today. So we had to find a place to take it from. Would be happy to work with you about finding a place that we could add this, because I think it is very, very important. Again, this is about protecting our ratepayers. If we're going to pass legislation here, and again, I want to reiterate that we knew when we signed this bill into law that we'd be opening ourselves up to litigation from one of our neighbor states, a state that we do a lot of commerce with and work together with very closely. So if we're going to have to defend ourselves in a court of law, we should have money set aside ready to do that. So we're not going to take from the AG, who's also going to be pursuing other things for this state. So I think we should support this amendment. And if we can't go on today because of that part of the place we're taking the money from, I hope that this can be in good faith and we can do it on the floor, or it could be added in Ways and Means.
Representative Carroll.
Thank you. Let me just say this to the author. I was in private practice for a while, and actually about 10, 15 years. And this amount represents a billing rate that must be going to the top firm in the Twin Cities. It seems like it's an excessive amount. Just wanted to point that out.
Representative Swidinski, final word on your amendment?
Yes, thank you. you know, and I think we're open, you know, I don't know if the committee would be open for an oral amendment. Representative Carroll, if you've got a different number do you think would work, that would gain your support for the amendment, I'd be certainly open to that. You know, I'm not set on $3.5 million, but you know, we just wanted to make sure that we were plenty generous when it came to the potential cost, because, you know, the understanding that lawyers are expensive, and, you know, defending policy decisions that may not have been the best. I'm open to that discussion, I guess. So.
Representative Carroll?
I prefer the billing rate of the Attorney General.
Any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. No.
No.
The nays have it. The motion does not prevail, and the amendment is not adopted. Next, we have the A-12. Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the A-12 amendment for the committee. You know, this amendment really, the state's got a lot of different goals. And one of the goals that's in statute is that the state of Minnesota is 5% below the national average when it comes to cost and affordability goal. And I think that's very important. We see over and over, we see, you know, quite frankly, a lot of the bill is crafted in a way that's trying to address the actual cost of energy. And, you know, right, Minnesota had a long history of being on the low end of the national average, and we set into motion a goal of 95% of the national average. And, you know, and this would really just set goals in a good hierarchy. And before this amendment, the A-12 really focuses on that puts the energy reduction goal behind the affordability goal to make sure that after 24 months of reaching a very important goal, which is keeping costs low for low-income families, for businesses, for single mothers, that for 24 months, then we will continue to go for the other goals which are set aside in this. It's not eliminating it. It's just giving a hierarchy. It's understanding that the cost of energy is an increasing problem and that this bill does not address that. It does not focus on lowering rates. It does not focus on – it does have a lot of subsidies, but it does not actually focus on that. And this just puts the goal – it allows our legislative – we elected officials to give the job to the PUC to put that as our – fundamental goal, the affordability one. And after 24 months, then we can move forward with the energy reduction goals that are in this. And it's really for families that are struggling in this high cost environment. And I would ask for your support.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. What I'll say is I appreciate the attention to electricity rates, and I do think, or electric rates, and I think that in this bill, we focus on that quite a bit in wanting to improve energy efficiency, to make energy costs less for families, recognizing how many people are burdened with high costs of heating and electricity. And so I think that not only with that, as well as energy generation through renewables, I think that the notion of having 24 consecutive months of the 5% below might be impractical. I certainly understand over a period of time and looking at the average, I think that's a better way of looking at it. And so I would recommend a no vote.
Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm also going to speak in support of this. You know, when we look at what this amendment's trying to accomplish, is that if we do actually accomplish keeping electric rates low and keeping them affordable, we're putting more money in every Minnesotan's pocket. That's unlocking Minnesotans' abilities to be able to do what they need to do to reach those goals. So if more money is in someone's pocket, that means that they could be looking forward to using the free market and finding contractors or doing home improvements themselves to make themselves more energy efficient. We're giving that freedom back to Minnesotans with this amendment. That's so vitally important. You know, when we talk about creating generational wealth for families and we talk about letting everyone live that American dream, it's, you know, that sacred right of homestead and owning your property and putting investment into it and making it better. But if electric rates keep rising along with other factors that are going on inside our society and our economy right now, they're barely having the money right now to make it by. So if we can change this around so that the goal is to keep electric rates and energy affordable will actually be unlocking more economic potential for our communities and for people on either end of the spectrum. That's why we're going to do this today, and I'm hoping that we can come together on this and add this to the bill today. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Final comments on the amendment for Senator? Okay. With that, all those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
No. No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Next, we have the A4 amendment. Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This is the amendment that I spoke to earlier when I misread my notes.
Would you like to move the amendment?
Yes, I'd like to move the A4 amendment, please.
Representative Swidzinski moves the A4.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this amendment really is a really focused amendment, really talking about, you know, this isn't opening up nuclear plants next week. This is simply allowing the department to do an advanced nuclear study. You know, if anyone's been on a tour, we understand that the possibilities of nuclear power are become very diverse. It's not necessarily a giant, huge, single unit facility in the state, but it may just be a small unit that's on a tractor trailer someplace. The technology is changing quickly, and when Minnesota has an absolute ban, this doesn't just say open it up. This is just a study to take a look at, you know, how nuclear could potentially be in our state. You know, I believe that some of this language is in a different part of some bills that may or may not be heard in the legislature, and I would recommend us really look at this, Madam Chair. It's not a positive. It's not a negative. I don't know what they'll find. I'm not telling them what their solution will be, but Madam Chair, I would encourage you to look at this language and potentially adopt it. I'm going to pull the A4 just because I believe in the good faith of legislators and doing what's right, but I want to have the conversation that I think Minnesotans should be looking at the possibility of this. It's carbon free. Obviously, we've heard in the news there's always some side effects, but in the reality, this isn't saying positive. This isn't saying negative. This is saying just take a gander at it. And I would ask the chair to potentially support that if something comes forward. So I will pull the A4 amendment.
Okay. Representative Swidzinski withdraws the A4 amendment. Next, we have the A8 amendment. Representative Swidzinski, do you want to move that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the A8 amendment.
Representative Swidzinski moves the A8 amendment.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Representative Akam, this is becoming a growing issue. The under current law, it's my belief that wind turbines have a half mile setback from WMAs and public lands, and you know the state of Minnesota. You know this bill will ultimately be joined in with the Environment Committee and the environmental bill on both the House and the Senate, and the conjoining of those two I think is exceptionally important. The state of Minnesota makes big investments on behalf of our sportsmen and wildlife across the state. And we're seeing an increasing mixing of those two investments. We have on one side the solar investments that are being made by ratepayers and individuals and businesses and Xcel and others, but we also have the investments made by the state of Minnesota and the federal government on the purchase of land to set them aside for conservation and whatnot. And there are many examples of this that I think most common sense Minnesotans would agree probably aren't two things that mix well. And we have an example in Osakis. If you're ever up on Highway 94, there's the Osakis exit. Take that right off the interstate, head north on Osakis, and take a look at that. And just in your heart of hearts, is that a proper setting of that, where you literally have hunting land on one side of a fence, and you have an 8-foot chain link fence, and then you have a solar farm? And while we may be private land next to it, you are adversely changing the dynamic of that hunting land. You can't hunt it. You know, if anyone has a 12-year-old in their house, Harry will be taking the training shortly. But gun owner safety is a fundamental rule of know what you're shooting at and know what's behind it. And while that development is fundamentally changing the state investment in those particular areas, there's a brand new one. I just was talking to the Pheasants Forever organization last night at the fishing. There's a fishing group that was in the cities last night, and there's a development in Dakota County where it's essentially a WMA that has an 80-acre chunk in the middle of it that is now solar. And essentially the hunting, the outdoor recreation of that whole property has been compromised because of the development in it. And this would just simply study it. You know, animal, you know, if you're a deer hunting association, they've been looking at this issue. The Pheasants Forever have been looking at, the Turkey Hunters Association has been looking at this issue. It's an important one. Should we be putting solar farms next to public land? Because as many of us know, if you're practical at all, I don't know, a white-tailed buck cannot jump an 8-foot fence with barbed wire at the top of it. And pheasants don't like to nest near trees because of the predator issues, those eagles that we've tried to set free earlier. So we were just asking for $100,000 to study it, to say, can the state of Minnesota have an impact on where these are placed? Does it make sense to put them next to WMAs, areas of the state that we have, so that young people can enjoy the outdoors in a special way? And I would ask for your support on that.
Any other discussion?
Go ahead.
I would say that the money this would come from is another one of my bills, building energy codes, which gets at the new building, commercial building side of things, and is really important. Small amount of money, but a really important program, so I would recommend to know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. And I, as a wildlife biologist, I love that we have the incredible parks and public space in our state. It's important, and I think also, you know, being able to hunt and have places where you can enjoy all of those things, I think, is important. Where I have some heartburn is around telling a private landowner what they can and cannot do with their private land. And so we often talk about local control, and I think that to take that control or that right away from a private landowner, I have some trouble with. I think that, you know, there are things that, to your point of fences, I certainly understand and appreciate that. I can't imagine that is a huge concern, and because of that and the private land issue, I would recommend a no vote.
Representative,
thank you. And to try to qualm, you know, both arguments against the amendment to Representative Kraft, I'm willing to take the money from any other program that you would deem fit. I'm open up for that oral amendment. I'm happy to do so at your request. And to Representative Akam, you know, this is a study. This is not saying, you know what, you know, this is not telling deer to go fly a kite. This is say we just like to see where you can fly a kite and or not. And, you know, a study, I think, is a pretty innocuous thing to at least see what is the truth on the ground. You know, how is it affecting animal movements? You know, we've seen the changing biology of potential. If you're thinking that we're going to have over 100,000 acres of solar developed in the state of Minnesota, we just will be on the front end of this. Sooner or later, that development is going to be in your districts someplace in the state. It's going to affect someone's favorite hunting spot because now they're going to be cut off from animal movements and the rest. And you know, I just think this is a common sense approach, and I'd appreciate your support.
Okay, with that, all those in favor of the A8 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay.
Nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. So next we have the A6 amendment. Representative Swiderski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. The A6 amendment really is just another study. And, you know, one of the biggest issues under current law, it has been legislators in the past that have found it a big part of conversation that we do not impact when it comes to energy generation facilities that impact or use prime farmland. In previous legislatures, we've had that in law. But when it comes to solar installations and the rest, and as spoke to the previous amendment, the potential impact of 100,000 acres of prime farmland taking out of production will have an impact on food production, will have a impact on cost, and it's not like it's the only option. And this is not telling, this is not prescriptive, this is simply pulling $250,000 out of a very vast budget to just simply take a look at the issue and understanding its real, true impacts. you know, does taking prime farmland out of Minnesota production decrease or increase deforestation in Amazon? Does it? Some of us believe it will. You know, does the taking out of 100,000 acres potentially of prime farmland raise the cost of food in Minnesota? Does taking 100,000 acres out of production impact neighboring landowners and farmers when it comes to the ability to compete for property when the state government is using taxpayer dollars to purchase land but also subsidize industries to take their land? And this does not say whether that's good, whether that's bad. It just simply takes just a smidgen of money, $250,000, and my guess is probably from one of Representative Kraft's bills.
Mine.
Or yours. and it's just a study, and I'd appreciate your support.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, yeah, this time it was my bill. And so what I will say is the bill that you're taking the money out of is the Weather Ready Extension Program. It's a program that is proposed to be run through the university to work with land managers around the state on how to be dealing with weather resiliency. And so the Weather Ready Extension Program is endorsed by the Corn Growers Association and the Farmers Union. These are questions, frankly, that they will be dealing with and dealing with land managers all across the state. And so given that and the fact that it is limiting what private landowners can do on their private land, if they want to diversify their revenues, that I think that solar should be considered. And so with that, I recommend a no vote.
Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am supporting this amendment today as well. And there's kind of four points that I want to talk about why I will be supporting it. And the first would be, and it kind of leads off what Representative Swazinski was talking about with farmland and having adequate supply chains for our food, for not just our state, but our nation. And the thing that kind of hit me is if we're going to diminish the amount of farmland that we'll have here because of solar farms, we're going to need to be getting that food from other places. So, and one of the main talking points of this committee has been about our carbon footprint. Well, again, it's that sliding scale. So if we're not going to be producing the crops needed here to feed and manufacture food and distribute it here, we'll have to be taking it from other places. That's going to increase Minnesota's carbon footprint. I think it's important to think about that. Second, you know, if you have a couple thousand acre farm, you know, you have farmhands that are working there. You are providing jobs in greater Minnesota. Well, a solar farm doesn't have a parking lot, and they're definitely not working tractors. So what is that going to mean to rural greater Minnesota communities that might lose out on those opportunities to continue the family farm or to have a farmhand who is maybe in high school learn the trade and then pick up that farm from someone who's looking to retire? We'll diminish that. The third thing is, again, is it sustainable? You know, when we set up these solar farms, they're, you know, these leases, these contracts go into anywhere from 15 to 30 years. Well, you know, a lot can happen in 15 to 30 years. And then this amendment also talks about breaking it down and how are we going to make sure that we can reclaim the land. You know, there's things you can read online that have happened around the country where, you know, these solar companies that go into these leases and these contracts, well, yeah, they'll remove the solar panels in 15, 20 years. But they're going to leave the pilings in the farm, you know, concrete. How is any farmer going to remove all that and do all that? That's why we need to study that and make sure. And then finally, that last part, and this thing that I really liked, was the impacts to the soil quality. So if you're going to be done working, you know, that field, per se, and you're not going to be doing cover crops, and you're not tilling, and you're not adding anything, what happens to that prime farmland after 10, 15, or 20 years? Because I tell you what, if we run into a situation where maybe one of our allies isn't our ally and we can't get food or, you know, shipping breaks down again because of a pandemic, and I hope that never happens, and we need to start incentivizing getting back to work on growing here in America, well, what if it's going to take 3 to 5 years to get that prime farmland back up to rec with having to do cover crops and adding different types of lime and other things you would need, which, again, that also trips, we could even have a supply chain issue on that. We need to be thinking about this as a larger thing rather than just, you know, going back to the private land rights. And I appreciate you saying that, Madam Chair, but if we're going to talk about respecting private land rights, there's a much larger conversation to have there around a ton of other things. We can't pick and choose when we want to make that our argument. So I'll be supporting this amendment today, and I hope we can all do the same. Again, it's a study. We're not writing law. We're just going to make sure that this thing can be done correctly. Thank you.
Other comments? Final comments, representatives?
And just a reminder to the committee, this is not prescribing. I mean, this study could prove us wrong. I mean, I'm willing to lay out my beliefs on there that allow this. I mean, the money will stay to the U of M. So, you're $1 million that we're just taking a small portion, the $250,000 would go to the extension. But this money would stay within the U of M system so that you could do this study. I think that's important. I'm willing to risk the things we're saying that maybe we're wrong. And maybe this study will not find that the things that we're concerned about are true. And I think, but we do need to find out whether that's reality or not. And I think that's what this money does. It doesn't say for or against or nasty or good or bad. It just says, let's take a look at it. And I think, studies are one of those ways that legislators can, we give speeches, we talk, we care. But at the end of the day, we're still at the beginning edge of this with the amount of development we've had and what the potential income, or the impact will be on agriculture and energy. I would just ask for your support. Thank you.
Okay, with that, all those in favor of the A6 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay.
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 The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. We have the A9 amendment now. Representative Swazinski, do you want to move your amendment?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A9, I moved the A9 amendment before the committee. This one's pretty straightforward in the fact that, one of the big concerns we've had with the passage of the blackout bill in the last month is really we were told that there's some good off-ramps. So when energy becomes more unreliable, when it becomes more expensive, when it becomes, essentially tougher to manage, that we're just trying to increase the robustness and the ability for utilities, especially cooperatives and municipalities who have locally elected folks that are in charge within their power structure, that they have a little bit clearer, wider off-ramp. And, right now it's my belief, and I feel that, under the current law as the blackout bill was passed, that is a pretty narrow path. While it's fun to have a bike path for an exit, I want to have a four-lane highway, and that helps, really the understanding from a perspective that this opens it up. This allows four lanes instead of a bike path for an exit when the blackout bill comes to fruition. For folks to get out of it, and I would ask for your support.
Discussion to the amendment. Jericho?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so as the 100% clean energy bill was drafted, it was carefully included off-ramps to ensure reliability and cost were taken into consideration. And so I think that by dividing it out for public utilities and other utilities will only confuse the situation. The existing condition is already there for the Public Utility Commission to look at those potential off-ramps. And so I would encourage, I think it's only going to confuse the issue and lead to potentially inconsistencies in how it's being administered. So I would recommend a no vote.
Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I think it's okay that we're going to be strengthening these off-ramps today because, in the months passing here since the blackout bill, House File 7, I spent a lot of time talking to my munis, my co-ops. There's a lot of worry and concern over what happened because they were barely brought to the table as it was. And, again, these co-ops, these munis, they're facing larger problems than just trying to reach the goals that were now in place. I challenge every member in this room to reach out to a local muni or a co-op and ask, what's your wait time on a transformer? What's your wait time on a power pole? And the earliest I've heard they can get a power pole is, 8 to 12 months if they're lucky. So they're already dealing with costs through the roof that they're having to work day and night to try and keep their rates affordable and low for the communities that they serve, and all we've done is have to increase those costs with this bill without them being included. It's the right thing to do to strengthen these off-ramps so that we can keep power affordable and reliable across the state. I've mentioned it before, and I'll mention it again. One of the best ways to lift all people up, to put more money in their pocket, give them more prosperity, and, oh, by the way, make them more, reduce their carbon footprint, is to give them affordable power. They have affordable power, they're going to have more money again to put into their lives in a different way, whether it be their economy, whether it be their home, whether it be saving for their children's college education. There's a multitude of ways that this is going to help our economy and help Minnesota be the best state it possibly can be. The decisions we make at this table and in that House chamber have drastic effects on the people we all serve, whether it be in a small district in Minneapolis or be in a district like mine where I represent a city that's larger than the entire county of Ramsey. This stuff matters. So I really hope we can add this amendment today to think of the multiple factors that our communities and our co-ops are going through as they're trying to navigate the new laws that are in effect and make sure to take care of their people. Because as Representative Swazinski said, these aren't just anyday people. These are the community members. These are their neighbors. These are their family who are locally elected to help run a co-op. We can't trample on that process. It's worked for us for over 100 years. These people have built out wonderful, wonderful networks and provide some of the greatest services to keep lights on and keep them affordable in Minnesota. Let's support this amendment today.
Representative Swazinski, final comments on your amendment?
I'd ask for the committee's support. Thank you.
Okay. With that, all those in favor of the A9 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay.
Nay. Nay.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. We're now through amendments, so we'll move to discussion on the bill. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. Thank you, Representative Akam, for this. We had some nice opportunities that we could have potentially improved the bill and potentially even gotten some bipartisan support. I'm not sure where other members here. We're a little short-staffed here when it comes to members, but we do care. And I think some of the areas that we've talked about, really are concerning. In the fundamental just standpoint that, these dollars have the potential, they could have went back into ratepayers' hands or really done things to just lower the cost in general when it comes to their bills today and given Minnesotans relief on their energy bills. We create a lot of new programs, a lot of new mandates on business and utilities, and it's my hope that through the process of I'm guessing the bill that will be passing off the Senate will be potentially a little bit different, but it's my hope that we can have a little bit of a calming force that comes upon whoever gets appointed onto the conference committee, and that we can get a product that maybe potentially can have some bipartisan support. But it's my guess that right this moment that this bill won't receive that, and that's unfortunate. I think one of the big issues that we do have is what are we funding and why. And, it's interesting, one of the big parts and kind of the biggest caveat of this bill is the support on EV vehicles and some of that the state of Minnesota will be joining into. And it's interesting, I was just, looking back at past dockets, and the Attorney General really was quite interesting when Xcel Energy brought an EV support module before the commission. The Attorney General really spoke quite interestingly about them, and in one of his quotes that he presented was, "Yes, it is well documented in record that EV adoption has been strongly correlated with income, with EV adoption rates dramatically higher among wealthier households, and thus thus the distributed impact of Xcel EV proposals and potential benefits will largely who make EV purchases." And and some of the other things when it comes to the implementation and the placement of EV charging stations, he says, both fast charging ports and level two charging ports in California are more common in more affluent zip codes and in less affluent zip codes. Folks, this is all, a vast majority of these dollars are taxpayer dollars, but some of them will be also ratepayer dollars. And the increase in the mandates that we put on them will adversely affect the costs and lives of costs for those folks that are probably less fortunate in our state of Minnesota. And while we do see parts of these, this bill focuses on upgrading electrical panels up to the tune of $10,000 a piece, There are no income levels. There's no clawbacks when it comes to the cost and the ability for taxpayers to reclaim that if that property is sold or the people they rent to has changed. You know, as the bill is written, if you're you own a apartment complex in the state of Minnesota, as long as you at the time of application rent to a lower income person, you can apply to get funds to redo your electrical panels so that they can plug in vehicles that they can't afford. And if they change who they rent to a year later, it doesn't matter. And I really think that's unfortunate. And you know, one of the other things that the Attorney General talks when he was rallying against EV support was could present the worst both of worlds. The cost will likely fall disproportionately on lower income customers and people of color, while the benefits will likely accrue primarily to higher income and Caucasian Minnesotans. And you know, I think that's you know, one of the bad parts of this bill is that primarily focus, whether it's the you know, we had the bill that's going to put over $15 million into grid upgrades so that primarily upper income Caucasian people can put solar on their homes. And that's $15 million that could be going to rate relief. That's $15 million that could be being spent someplace in our economy that actually grows jobs, grows economy, and doesn't, you know, subsidize up to the tune of $50,000 so that rich folks can put solar panels on their roofs. You know, this bill could have done a lot of things. It's not going to make energy more energy more affordable in Minnesota. It's not going to decrease our bills tomorrow when families are suffering today, and it will spend money. And I do question. You know, we have a large budget target of $250 million and $90 million of it coming from the RDA. You know, it's my concern you know, that in 5 years we'll say, where did this money really get spent? You know, will this money look like Sochi? When I say Sochi, it's a lot of money spent on a big flashy thing that got us through an election, and there it sits empty and desolate and abandoned with weeds growing through the cracks after the Olympics. And you know, I think we could have done better. I appreciate the time that this committee took. I appreciate Representative Akam and your willingness to hear us and hear our voice. I've never felt unlike other chairs that we've been cut off. So I really do appreciate that we've been able to have a real conversation. I would ask members to vote no. Thanks.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank Chair Akam for this bill. You know, between this bill and 100% clean energy bill, I think we've made some important progress this session, particularly on the issue of climate change. You know, this is a climate emergency that we're in, and there's urgency to address it. You know, we keep having scientific report after scientific report that this emergency is growing and getting deeper. We have extreme weather event after extreme weather event. And you know, there's a couple of highlights of the committee that I think really, you know, deserve to be underlined. You know, when we had the insurance industry coming here and talking about the incredible costs of these weather events, I think it drives home the point that this is really an issue of the economy and the decisions we make here now and the bills that we debate, as you mentioned, Reverend Swedzinski, do have significant import, not only for now but for future generations. And those costs, the health costs, we had a discussion about that recently, I think are incalculable. So I just again want to thank you, Chair Akam, and I would concur that we had a great a committee in terms of you know, the quality of our discussions and the public testimony and the different viewpoints that were expressed. But I'm very, very proud to support this bill and really appreciative again that we really put the climate and energy and climate in this committee, and I appreciate that very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll just kind of lead with what Representative Hornstein was saying there. Thank you for running a good committee. Again, I'll echo kind of everyone's saying here. We had some very robust discussions, sometimes even a little heated, if you will, but it was always in a respectful manner, and that was very well done. So thank you for that. In regards to the bill today, I'll just start by saying, you know, I will not be able to support it today, and for a couple of reasons. And I think the overarching term, and I won't try to repeat some of the things that Representative Swazinski has said, but what this bill is going to be doing today is making the state of Minnesota the driver on policy. And it kind of hit me when I was looking over there and I saw a lot of people in this room that are part of our IOUs, you know, munis, co-ops. I challenge all of us in this room to ask them today where they have been trying to bring their organizations in regards to carbon efficiency and climate change and trying to get to the 100%. They were all well on their way to doing it before we entered and started trying to make mandates upon them to get there faster or expedite things. And that's because of one thing. I mean, the free market has been driving this conversation. You know, I think I used the example in this committee. If the average consumer goes to the grocery store and there's a product that says one was produced, you know, carbon neutral or one wasn't, the average consumer these days is going to purchase the carbon neutral product. We're aware of that. I know I'm aware of that, and that's why I'm carrying bills like, you know, carbon capture and carbon sequestration, because I realize that this is becoming a part of our economy, and that's because of the free market driving. Not because a few people sat in a room in the Minnesota House or the Minnesota Senate and wrote a bill. But that is the way things are going. But by making the state the driver, what we've done is prepared the state to see larger costs in energy. And that's all driven because, if we increase the demand through unfunded mandates without the supply, we are just going to see those costs come back, and the only person who's going to be able to pick it up is a ratepayer. And a ratepayer is a taxpayer. And it's our job to look out for those people. And if we would have let the free market continue on its own, the free market could have adapted. We could have brought more manufacturing to this state. That's another point I'll make, right? When we look at how we can be using energy to make sure we keep rates low, affordable, and reliable, we're not using our full toolbox. We withdrew that amendment on nuclear in hopes that we can actually get that added to do a study, but we really do need that all-of-the-above energy approach. Solar and wind is not going to save us, even if we had megawatt batteries that we could install in a day. Maybe we can use those emergency permits. But that's another huge part to the conversation, too. You know, when we talk about saying that these battery storages are going to save us, we don't know what the permitting is going to look like that or what groups are going to come out and oppose it here in the state of Minnesota. You know, if these batteries are going to start having to do EISs and EAWs, well, who's to say they're going to even be able to have a shovel in the ground in 2 years or 3 years? If it's anything like a lot of the other projects in the state, it's going to take a decade. And what does that do to our affordability and our reliability? Throws it out the window. And again, you know, we start this committee's name is the Climate and Energy Committee. There's only one measure in this bill that actually, I think, does something to address climate, and that's the Buy Clean, Buy Fair. And I do appreciate that provision for what it is. It's having a conversation that I think is important, but it's only talking about steel and concrete. Everything else in this bill today is going to take, you know, millions of tons of critical minerals. And I'll save the committee some time because I know I've talked about it a lot about how we have the critical minerals right here in Minnesota. But again, this is all part of our global climate. And by spending millions of dollars in creating mandates that our IOUs, our munis, our co-ops, our businesses, our schools have to buy into, whether it be an electric bus or whether it be a, you know, 100 megawatt solar farm, they're buying in to other nations around the world that don't believe and don't follow the practices that I think all of us in this room believe in. So we're not actually making the climate any cleaner. We're not making this place any better. We're pushing it out to the corners of the world where we can't see it. Members, that's not how we be leaders. That's not how we leave it better for the next generation. You know? Again, when you have time, Google it. Go on Twitter. You know, the pristine oceans and seas around the island of Indonesia are stained red from nickel mining. People are being oppressed, enslaved. Also, we can hit a carbon neutral goal? At what? Representative Kraft, you said something a few weeks ago about how the cost of carbon gets repealed in 3 years after a solar panel is producing electricity. I wonder what it does for the child that mined it. Does it take 3 years? What about the forest that was destroyed? Does that take 3 years? And I don't mean to be critical, but literally we need to open our minds and think larger about the decisions we're making at this table. We are thinking about the next generation. We do want to leave it better. And we do want to create a state that prospers for all of us. But by making Minnesota the driver, and by taking that freedom out of our free market and out of our homes and taking more money out of people's pockets by increased rates, we're not doing anything. We're putting our thumb on people, whether it be just a family, whether it be a business, whether it just be an industry as a whole. We need to find a way to lift business up to get to the goals that people want without the state coming in and saying, this is how you're going to do it. It's our way or the highway. That's not our job as state elected officials. And that's not what, and I was reminded of that in a town hall on Saturday back in my district. Our job is to return back to our people and carry those ideas and what they want. And don't get me wrong, I think all of us in this room have our different areas of expertise and some ideas that we bring to the table. That's why we ran for office. And we can be advocates for things, which I think we all are, but we cannot be activists. We must be intelligent, we must research, we must learn from each other. And this bill today isn't going to accomplish the all-arching goal of making the state, nation, and world better for those who are going to come after us. I hope we can make some changes in the weeks ahead before it's passed, but at this moment, I can't support it, and I know that the people of my district, especially northern Minnesota and on the Iron Range, cannot support it either. Thank you.
Representative Holland.
Thank you, Chair Kraft. And thank you, Chair Akam, for bringing this bill forward and working with us to create it. I have so many thoughts about it, but the first thing I want to say is I really do appreciate the other side of the aisle in this committee. I feel like I'm in some pretty heated committees, and the folks in climate and energy have been really great to work with and have been really receptive and had thoughtful, you know, arguments and additions, and I appreciate that. Like, I truly, truly do. And that it hasn't gotten ugly into this place where we're yelling at each other in hurtful ways. Like, I really love that about this committee. I do want to address the sort of idea that this bill is going to primarily benefit wealthy Caucasian people, because I am representing a district that is mostly lower income and that is mostly communities of color. And I feel very certain and very confident that this is going to directly benefit them, directly and indirectly. I know electric panel upgrades were mentioned, and I know that's my bill, so obviously I love it. But also, I mean, you know, this is one of the things that Representative Garofalo and I have had a lot of conversations about, that this isn't going to be used primarily for people plugging in electric cars. Like, people in my district with 100-year-old houses who are low income are going to use this so that they can, like, use a microwave and not worry about their lights flickering and, you know, have a laptop and a TV going at the same time. I don't know how to explain to you all how frustrating it is to be in a house that can't sustain modern technology. And I'm not exaggerating, it is very true. I cannot blow dry my hair while the television is on because things will go out. They're like switches will flip. And so to me, when we look at this legislation, this is really about people who are gonna benefit from like the most basic aspects of electrification and upgrades that need to be made in their homes. Electric vehicles. Yeah, probably most of my district isn't gonna buy electric vehicles, but we are bordered by 94 and 35. And so those fumes coming off of everybody's cars that are driving are coming to my district. They're coming to the people in my neighborhood. And frankly, they're coming to the lowest income individuals, because that's where folks can afford to live, is along those major corridors where there is a ton of traffic and people are being directly impacted by the air quality that's there. That's why there's higher rates of asthma for the kids that live along those corridors. And this is going to impact them. It's going to make it easier for them to breathe. It's going to put less pollutants into the air that they are currently consuming. Same thing with electric school buses. I mean, I'm really excited about this because we have school buses that drive in our densely populated neighborhoods and areas, and they are just running constantly, blowing diesel fume everywhere. And especially when it's cold in Minnesota, you know, they are just standing still waiting
for the correct time to pick up a kid. Because if your school bus is early, right, it doesn't just come and leave your kids. They sit there and they wait. And it is just filling the streets with these fumes. And I've honestly had a number of constituents and neighbors who came to me and said, is there something we can do about this? Because it is gross. And not only gross, it's dangerous. It impacts the health of not just the people in the community, of not just the kids, but also the drivers of these school buses. So I'm really excited about that as well. And then finally, weatherization. And one of the things that I think that we don't always recognize in this committee and in this place at the legislature about weatherization is that it's not just something to like lower your energy costs. This is literally to keep people's houses warm because people in my district are cold. They are using their stoves as heating mechanisms because their houses are so old that the insulation just isn't working and they don't have the ability to upgrade these things. So, I mean, yeah, for me, it'd be like, oh, great, my electric bill goes down. But for them, it's literally about keeping themselves and their kids and their families warm. And so when I see this bill, I see a ton of things that are going to directly and indirectly impact those communities that I represent, but also communities of color and lower income communities across the entire state of Minnesota. So I am really excited about this bill. And the final thing I'll say is, you know, we've heard a lot about free market, and I think we need to recognize that the current system that we're living in isn't the free market. Fossil fuels have been heavily, heavily subsidized for decades. And so to say that the free market has made it cheaper for us to do these things just is wholly inaccurate. It's not correct because that was not the free market. It was subsidized by the government. And now we are doing something that is going to directly benefit and impact people, not just now, but also for the future. That's the reason why I'm here. That's the reason why I do this work, is because I am looking down the line at how my grandkids and great-grandkids are going to be impacted by what we do today. And everything that I do is influenced by what I hope to see, you know, 50, 60 years down the line. And when I see this bill, I'm excited for what the future has to hold. So thank you very much for pulling it together, and thanks for the time to speak.
Thank you. I'm going to make a few comments and then turn it over to the chair. Folks, were you in there? Representative Bierman, go ahead.
I'll be brief because a lot of things I was going to remark on have been remarked upon already, but I did just want to add that, so I've been on this committee, this is my fifth year. It's been the best year because we're seeing some movement in areas that we have struggled with to move the dial a little bit. And as Representative Hollins was just saying, you know, where's that line between free market and public policy? And I think clean cars is a good example of that. We've been talking with constituents back in our districts about clean cars. Some are for them, some are opposed. But that is a clear indicator or a clear marker where, you know, our legislation, the governor's actions on that have been following industry. And so I think that's just one point where we have this intersection of corporate interest and public well-being. And I sit on a health committee as well, and I just want to point out that I see a lot of similarities between that intersection of corporate providers and public well-being and our responsibility as legislators to initiate policies that make everything work for our citizens. So the free market by itself will not get us to where we need to go. And I think someone, policymakers here at this table and in the health committee, we need to lead sometimes. We need to set the standards. We need to set the goals, whether it's, you know, energy costs and setting that goal in statute and trying to reach it, or whether it's the cost of health care. So there's that intersection we deal with all the time, and I just wanted to note that. But I'm glad to see we are finally moving the dial and setting some policies in place that will move us forward in this area and help get to where everybody is participating in this transition, which is a long transition. This is not an overnight thing. But it takes the energy companies, and it takes the acknowledgement that, you know, there's going to be future changes. We can only do so much, and then we have to adjust again. And those adjustments will come, whether it's the off-ramps or new technologies like nuclear, as Representative Swedzinski talked about. So we have to be open-minded to that. And I appreciate the other side of the aisle having that mindset that we need to consider all these things. I believe in that as well. Weatherization, Rep. Hollins mentioned that. This is a historic year for us. And the five I've been here, we are actually going to do some of that and help a lot of people in all of our districts. And that's what we were sent here to do as well. So just want to acknowledge and thank all of the Republicans, all the Democrats, and the chair for her leadership. And appreciate your participation.
Representative Carroll.
Thank you. I'll be very brief. And I just want to thank the chair for her leadership and for bringing this bill. It's been a delight to be on this committee, having you lead us in the way you do it, respectfully, courteously, but engaging. And let me just thank our friends on the other side of the aisle, led by Representative Swedzinski. Same to you. You've been outstanding, and it's an honor to serve with you and for bringing the next generation along. And, you know, you said he takes after his mother in terms of his intelligence. I think he's got some of you in there, too.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I have a few comments. You know, we are facing a once-in-a-humanity challenge. And I'm not going to go through all the great stuff in this bill that people have gone through. There's a lot of things I really love about it. I really appreciate Representative Hollins talking about some of the side benefits of the things we're doing. I mean, you know, there is the challenge we have, but it is a tremendous opportunity. Climate change presents us a tremendous opportunity to invest differently. And the side benefits of the things we do in this committee often are, we even should think of as the prime benefits. So I'm just really excited about that. I also want to say that, you know, coming into this, I was wondering what the committee would be like. And what I actually really appreciate is that there wasn't a lot of debate about whether climate change is a thing or not. A little bit, but not much. And I really appreciate that the ideas coming from the other side, because I think we are better in dealing with this issue when we have not just Democratic ideas, but Republican ideas as well. So although I disagree with Representative Igoe's framing on much of the issues, I really appreciate the passion you have for your district and the way you're pushing us to think about the embodied emissions of carbon. And so I respect that and want to work with you on that going forward. This kind of discussion that we've had, I have to just thank the chair, because it's been a great learning experience for me, and I think it's set the right tone to get a lot of good things done. So thank you. Madam Chair.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This this has been a long couple of months, and we have worked hard, and I really do want to thank each and every one of you for participating in this. I appreciate Representative Swedzinski so much for always leading with respect and keeping disagreements respectful. I am grateful to the staff who have done an amazing job supporting us, Mr. Eloff and Ms. Eng. Thank you so much. Of course, Mike Molzon, who is I wouldn't be here if it weren't for him. And of course, Chelsea Ray and Eric Anderson and Mark Nisley and our wonderful pages, Tom and Nayuma. So I just thank you to all of them for helping us do this work, because we couldn't do it without them. And I will say, as so many have talked about this, the bill specifically, so I'm going to just approach this a little bit differently. As a legislator, I feel like one of the most important things that I do is listen. And whether that's in my district or whether that's here at the Capitol, I listen. And what I have heard in my years of being involved in an elected capacity is that climate change is an issue that's important to Minnesotans. And so when people talk about that it's, you know, the state is making people do things, I would disagree with that. I think that that Minnesotans are wanting it and demanding it, and especially young people. And I think that we, so many times today, from all of you on both sides of the aisle, talking about the future. And I think if we all continue to focus on the future, that we will get there in a good way, working together. So with that, I move that the DE1 as amended be moved. Is that right? Yeah, I move the DE1 as amended.
DE1 as amended? No. Yes.
Have we already done that?
Yes.
Okay.
Any further discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay.
Nay.
The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Would you like to renew your motion on the underlying bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would.
Okay. So, Chair Akam renews her motion that House File 2754, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any further discussion? All those. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay.
Nay.
The motion prevails. The bill is referred to Ways and Means. And with that, we are adjourned.
And maybe just before folks go, I think that just to keep eyes open for emails, this is our final committee meeting, but keep open. There might be some others that do come up. So just we'll see you again. Thanks.